You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Good evening.
How are we both?
All right. We're 25 episodes away from episode 100. That's pretty exciting.
That is very exciting, isn't it? Centenary.
That's episode. Math.
That's math. We do like math here on the Sprues and Brews podcast. So on today's podcast, we have got probably the best top three ever.
It's been a pretty fun top three, hasn't it?
It has been a very fun top three. This week, it is our top three jobs of the Imperium of Man.
And you know what? There's some fairly bad jobs out there, so it's good to see some of the top ones.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to sharing those with you later on, and we'll be sharing yours as well at the end of the podcast. We also have a feature in the Underhive.
We do. House of Chains, the new source book for Necromunda, just come out, and it's awesome.
So we're going to be talking about that later on. We've also got all the latest news, as always. So yeah, plenty to get our teeth into. But what have we been doing in the hobby over the last 7 days? So Matt, would you like to start us off?
I will share what we've been doing in the hobby for the last 7 days. So we have got the Purple Sparkly Unicorns mid-March, the 15th, I think it is.
Yep.
And I've been cracking on with the Sisters of Battle. Because I need to get them done. I've broken myself down into little weeks that I know if I can get it done within this week, I can get it done on track.
You've not got too much left to do now.
Well, not too bad. It's not looking too bad. So this week I've been painting a unit of Celestians, Dominions and Retributors along with a Canoness.
Cool.
So this is the bulk of, the second half of the infantry.
Mm-hmm.
The red's down and highlighted, the silver's down, the flesh is down. After the podcast, going to get the 50-50 Norn out and get the silver shaded. And then really, it's just all the detail in the bases, so another couple of days, should get them done by Sunday. While waiting for paint to dry, I also built two mortifiers.
Nice.
Which were as enjoyable as the last batch that I built, but they look really cool. To be fair, the second batch was easier to build than the first batch because I knew the kind of like problems from the first one. And they are, I said they weren't super modular last week. They are actually pretty modular. But I suppose two legs, two arms, there's only so much movement you've got. But they do look really, really nice. So then I've just got the Exorcist to build and then paint that, the Mortifiers and Celestine. And then we're done. So that's, I'm giving myself 2 weeks to get that lot done. And then, yeah, the Sisters are on track.
Excellent.
I've been resisting building some Titans, though, because, last week, was it? Did unboxing of the Warbringer and the Sinister, and they are so amazing.
Man, I wish I could be as focused as that.
Yeah.
I can't help but get distracted by things.
We had a little bit of a distraction though, didn't we, Dave? We had a game of Necromunda.
We did. I went into this with a very keen interest in having a game, but not knowing how it was going to play. And I expected it to be far more complicated than it actually was.
Yeah.
But one thing is for certain, I loved it.
It was so awesome. It was so fun. And it was a brutal game, wasn't it?
It was a brutal game. By the end, I think I had two guys left in this board, and you had one.
Yeah,
until Gore Halfhorn
holding up the Goliath forces. He was a legend.
He refused to die, is what he did.
He very nearly died at one point.
Mutants.
On more than one point.
Yeah. But it was really, really fun. So we had a practice game to get a kind of head around the rules, and then I think imminently, as soon as you built your new models, we're going to start a little campaign.
Yeah, so you were playing as your Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, the Venator Bounty Hunters, yeah. So I was using the Forge World model for the Bounty Hunters, using the names of those characters, but approximating the rules so they were my own guys.
Mm-hmm. Whilst I used the House Goliath, the original models that came out, and because it was the first game, I used them as they are named on the cards that come with the pack, the original pack.
Oh, you call them like a starter gang.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll give them all my own names and stuff. Although some of those names are quite catchy. So
call them all Dave.
Dave, yeah. Definitely. Nothing strikes fear into your heart other than, you know, Dave, really. Coming at you with a big two-handed axe. Yeah.
That's pretty terrifying.
So yeah, that was a really fun game, and it looked great on your Zone Mortalis as well. Can't wait to get painted.
Yeah, I've got a few more, but I think we were maybe just, not much, but just a little bit short in the line of sight blocking terrain. I think a couple more walls would have just been perfect, so they are also on
the
painting.
There was plenty of ducking round corners and hiding behind explosive barrels.
And chasing squats, which I found upsetting.
They were the first ones to die. It's like I had a problem with short people. Yeah, both squats died first.
In fact, the opening move of the game, Squat dodged out of cover and took one of your guys' heads off with a bolter.
He did. Maybe that was that's what it was. I was like, right, Squat's got
to
go.
That's a legitimate reason to hate squats, to be fair.
Yeah, definitely.
They just killed Dave, shot Dave's head off. All the other Daves.
Yeah, it was really fun. And
we also saw the bravery of the Goliath, definitely not running away from a fight.
Yeah, well, when because both of our armies, what would you call them?
Gangs.
Both our gangs broke in the beginning at the end of the same turn. I think it was turn two or turn three.
Yeah, this is after the complete carnage of a turn. There was bottle checks all over the shop.
But all of my guys managed to pass their core check. I think you lost two in that initial bottle check. And then when it came round to the next turn, and I think I'd saved two people, Matt uttered the words, "Dave, your Goliaths, you know, they keep their cool, don't they?" I then proceeded to lose three or four guys in one fell swoop, which was cursed words from Matt.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really good. Can't wait for the next game. It was excellent, good fun. So yeah, the week in the hobby for me was digging out those Goliaths. I think I only had like two left to build to fill up the gang. So I built those. I've been wanting to spray them this week. Hopefully I'll do that this weekend, weather depending. And also when reinforcements arrive, hopefully tomorrow. Because I've got the new Goliaths, the Forgeborn and the Stimmers. I think I'll be building one of each of those for the initial gang, methinks.
You can get two Stimmers in there, surely.
Maybe. They're quite expensive. I'm definitely giving one, after seeing the power of grenade launchers, a pair of assault grenade launchers sounds assault grenade awesome. So I'm definitely building one of those. I think he's 240 credits or something.
He's a lot.
He's expensive as my leader. So, yeah, looking forward to that. I've also started painting. Obviously, the Unicorns event is on the horizon. What I should have done, I've been painting Caradrons for the past couple of weeks, when there isn't really a deadline for them.
I was going to say, you can't take Caradrons to a 40k.
No, you can't. Yeah. So I've switched my focus back onto the army at hand, and that's the Tau, ready for the Purple Unicorns. It's going to be a push, but I'm currently doing some Fire Warriors, so if I get all 15 Fire Warriors done first, then I can have
You only need to get them to a certain level. So if you get the whole army to a certain level, then you'd be good then.
Yeah,
and it'd be good to get some games in as well.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to the club night on Tuesday.
We are.
To test these armies out.
Mm.
I'm also going to take a Storm Surge.
Storm Surge?
That's going to be an age to paint, I think.
With the new prototype weapon?
No. No, I won't be giving it the Annihilation Warheads, unfortunately. I don't think I've got enough Markalites in 1,250 points. To really,
you got all those stratagems that can just dump mark lights or something.
Yeah, I have. But I think you need four to fire a seeker missile at your normal ballistic skill.
Don't know.
So, anyway. I'm painting those. I want to try and get all 15 Fire Warriors done so I can move on to all the tastier suits and stuff. What else have I done in the hobby? So, I put the Caradrons to one side for the time being. But I did paint a random model two nights ago.
A random model.
With our Haish campaign on the horizon, I have painted a Demonette from Slaanesh.
That doesn't sound like the army you were going to do, Dave.
Well, I know.
As well as a top three, we should do top three guesses. What army is Dave collecting this week?
This week, yeah.
Problem is, between the time we put the tweet out and has recorded the
show,
I've changed my mind.
I'm really enjoyed painting that Demonette. I wanted to pick a really underpowered army, you see. You know, an army that doesn't win things. that should be fun. Plus, I think narratively for our Haish campaign, it just suits it down to a ground.
Narratively, Dave
narratively takes the next.
All the Luminef elves just running around, chasing, rounding up all the escaped Demonettes again.
Get
back in your pen. Get back to Orgu.
So, next week, we'll be talking about Dave's new change host army.
Yeah.
No, that's it. I'm locked in now, definitely. So that's me for this week. Jay, what have you been up to?
I've had a good hobby week, actually, even though I've been a bit busy this week because I've been out of the country. But I have I fell in love with some Forge World models. I think we said this last week. I can't remember.
We mentioned them. We did a video which went up a couple of days ago. Time is a bit dilated in the podcast, but yeah. At some point, we put a video up of this new set that Jay built.
Yeah, so these are the new 30k Dark Angels Inner Circle Knights, the Terminators from Forge World. I bought a pack of these because I thought the models just looked so cool, and I've got them built up and undercoated today, ready to start putting some paint on them, and they're amazing models. And I can see me adding more of these or some more, especially the Dark Angels Praetor in Terminator Realm. Yeah, I think I'll definitely grab really him cool. next to add him to the unit.
The new Forge World tanks look really nice in Dark Angel scheme as well, don't they?
I do like those tanks, yeah, the little like almost like the plague
burst crawler.
So these guys are great. The detail is so cool. Sometimes you just grab a Forge World model and you just think, well, they're not that much different anymore than the Games Workshop plastics. You know, the Games Workshop plastics are pretty good nowadays. But this kit is just amazing. All the detail on it is so cool and so crisp. It's very, very nice model.
I mean, it's a favourite Terminator kit I've seen. After we recorded the video, I noticed on the Forge website, they've got like gauntlet-mounted plasma guns?
Yeah, plasma casters they are. Right. I don't know what the rules are for them, but they're cool. So in place of their power fist, yeah, they've got this like almost like a Grey Knight sort of wrist-mounted plasma gun. And then they've got these massive swords, which are pretty much the same size as the model.
Yeah.
So I've got those guys built up, uncoated, so I'll try and get some paint on them in the next week or two.
I mean, the black, that's a good start.
Yes, that's it. The majority of the colours down. I've also finished building my Necromunda gang, the Palanite Enforcers, ready to join in this campaign because it sounds like you guys had so much fun playing Necromunda and I really want a game. So I've got them built and I have them sprayed. My plan today was to put some more paint on them, but I got a bit distracted. So I'll start working on those over the next couple of weeks as well. And I'm glad you said grenades are good in the game because I noticed when I was building all my Palanite Enforcers, they've all got like grenades. These little thing compartments on all their back. So I can imagine they're sort of like hunkered behind their right shields and the guys behind are just taking grenades off the guy from the back and lobbing them over. So that's cool. What else have I been doing? I have put a bit more paint on my Blood Bowl team, so they're getting there now. Got most of the base paint colours down, so I need to start shading and highlighting those. And then I also went on a bit of a spree today because I had a day off painting some Eldar because I haven't decided yet which army I'm going to take to
the
Sparkly Unicorns. So I've got a Custodian army I'm ready to take. I can just take that. I've got an Ultramarines army which is ready to take bar two models that just need highlighting. So I could take the Ultramarines. I've got a Tau army I could take. But then I've had my Elder army and I've been sort of working on my Elder army for years now, and I just every now and then I get into a mood where I just want to paint more of the Eldar, so and that's what mood I was in today. So
they look really nice. I think we've got a post somewhere on the site of Jay's Imlok.
So that's a few years old as well, wasn't it? Because I think I must have started this army about 4 or 5 years ago now. So I painted up finished off a second fire prism today, and including all the cockpit details and the canopies and stuff, which is the bit that I really like annoys me. I always leave that to last. I'm like, I've got to paint those cockpits, and then you put the canopy on the top of it, you can hardly see in it anyway. And some shiny spears. So these shiny spears I've converted using a combination of the new Eldar jet bikes. New, they must be about 6 years old as well now. The newest Eldar jet bikes, and so I take the bottom half of the Guardian Rider, and then I take the old metal shiny spears, resin, I suppose you can get them now, half hand cast, and I cut them in half and use a little bit of green stuff to sort of marry the two pieces together so they're sort of leaning over these new bikes with their lances out. So I painted them today. I had a bit of fun painting the white armour. White is such a hard colour to paint. Yeah. I had to paint them grey. I tried building up. I tried contrast. Wasn't happy with it. Went over it again. And then I went back to an old tried and tested method of using some Larmian medium with some... used to be called Space Wolf Grey, I think. What's it called now? Fenris Grey. Just to really water that down with the Larmian medium and then just run that over the model shades, all of the white panels. They've turned out quite good. I quite like them. So I've just got for that 1250 points now, if I want to make the battalion, which I think I do, I just need to paint finish painting two units of rangers. So I've done all the cloaks on them, so it's just the like the armour plates that are visible, and get those ready. And then that's a battalion of Eldar with a spearhead heavy support detachment, because I think we can take two detachments. But I am sort of, I really want, I've got an Incarn that I'm painting up as well. I really want to use the Incarn. I just don't know if a 1250 is just too small a a points thing to use it. Because obviously you take the Incar and that's the whole detachment comes in Ahri then.
Yeah.
And the models I've sort of painted up in my Elder Army don't really lend themselves very well to the Inari rules.
I'd go the Imlok and go for best painted.
Imlok, mm. Yeah. So yeah. I'll try that. Imlok. Imlok awesome. And some Fire Prisms. There'd be the Eand and Fire Prisms.
Very cool.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, that's all my hobbying this week.
So we've all had quite a good week of hobbying there, haven't we? So we'll take a pause at this point and we'll come back with our regular news segment. So what have we got in this week's news, Matt?
Well, we've got some pre-orders, not many, but we have got some. So this week we have got Jainzar, Drazar, the Howling Banshees and the Incubi, all out of the
Blood of the Phoenix,
yeah. So these, they were probably about 6 months old now, I suppose.
It was the start of the initial Psychic Awakening
set, yeah. These are a little bit on the pricey side. So the characters are €32.50, which if we look at similarly priced kits works out £25. And the Banshees and Incubi are €42.50, which works out £32.50.
Okay.
So the same price bracket as the Sisters Retributors.
Mm.
So it's quite expensive for five models.
You only get five models in a box?
Yep.
Wow, that is... something, isn't it? How much is a box of Intercessors?
I couldn't tell you if they were £32, maybe.
Yeah, that's for 10 Intercessors, which are bigger than a Howling Banshee.
But not priced on material, the price on how many you're going to take in your army.
I suppose you take a lot more Intercessors than Howling Banshees. Well, you would at that price.
But I mean, they're really nice kits. It shows what a bargain that battle box was.
Yeah.
Despite the gnashing of teeth at the time.
Definitely.
That's interesting. I mean, I do want to pick up those new Howling Banshees because I prefer actually the third edition metal Howling Banshees, which had the taller helms. Obviously, they're really hard to get hold of nowadays. I didn't like the metal Howling Banshees that came afterwards. They were a bit shorter.
Yeah.
These Howling Banshees seem a bit bigger, and I like these ones. But that's quite
there's cool. A nice article on Warhammer Community where they've been converting them up as well.
I've seen someone's made like a Harlequin looking Banshee, yeah.
Using like tree revenant bits and pieces, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
That's it. That's where you can use like the Dark Elder bits, the Harlequin bits, the Eldar bits, and then all the Elf type bits from the.
This could be your pointy ears fix, Jay.
Could be. What? Some Banshees.
Some Banshees, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they're really nice kits, a little bit on the pricey side, but they're really good.
Well, the Incubi race and the Drazar characters so cool.
They look really good. And that's it for pre-orders from Games Workshop, so quite a week. We were speculating whether coronavirus has had a knock-on effect on maybe some of the printed goods coming over from China.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was expecting to see the Seraphon Battle Tome up for pre-order by now myself. Yeah. It surprised me that we've not seen that yet. Maybe we'll see it on Sunday, maybe not.
Yeah,
maybe it's just Age of Sigmar armies are cursed by worldwide events.
Maybe they are.
Age of Sigmar is beginning with S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they're up for pre-order on Saturday. If you are the Warhammer fan who has everything, if you head down to Bookman's Bar, you can buy a 24-carat gold or silver coin.
Nice.
The gold coins are £12, the silver coins are £10. Saw somebody on our Twitter mention that these could be the most amazing and expensive ether gold tokens for your carriage runs.
I saw that. Do you know how many units are in a carriage run? I mean, it's a good idea, but I don't think that's a goer.
I mean, these are really nice. A bit of a niche thing, but if you've got a cool 24-carat Bugman's coin, then yeah. Head to Bookman's. We had a bit of a reveal from the New York Toy Show as well the other day.
Oh, yes.
So, for Warhammer Underworld's Beast Grave, we've got Morgox Crushers. So, these are an Iron Jaws warband.
Oh, yes. They are brutes. They are epically posed brutes.
Yeah.
Especially that leader. Oh, man, I can't wait for these.
Yeah.
These are going to be my Beast
Grave. What is it with one of them's not wearing any shoes? I noticed that.
One's not wearing a top. Oh, my armor of any kind. He's releasing his inner savage orc.
One just looks like he was in a rush putting all his armour plates on and like walked out the cave with no shoes on.
You know, a lot of my orcs don't have shoes.
No, but they're the savage orcs, aren't they? Yeah.
No, not some of the iron jaws don't have shoes.
I suppose, no. It just looked odd. The other two are wearing boots and he's not.
He prefers the natural comfort of walking on.
That's it. Yeah.
Whatever, rocks, grass.
They are ace looking models though.
Yeah, they are. Cool. Yeah, brilliant. I imagine these are going to be a super, super aggressive army. You know, sitting back in your deployment zone, these just smash things in the face.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we don't know where they're out, but presumably within the next 3 months.
Usually with these war bands, are very quick.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And that leaves, I think, just one war band
the
left.
The Witch Elves.
Mm. Yeah. So then, are we looking then at the next expansion from
Yeah, three? Normally it's in the autumn that season 3 gets announced, so I'm guessing these guys in the spring, and then the Witch Elves in the summer, and then the announcement for next season.
Excellent.
I mean, the year's flying by already, isn't it? We're almost on March.
It really is.
So, yeah, hopefully they are sooner rather than later. We saw some goodies for Aeronautica at the New York Toy Show as well. Plastic Avenger Strike Fighters.
Mm.
So these are really cool. These will be coming alongside Skies of Fire, which is the new Tau versus Imperium box that I'm very tempted to pick up.
I'm the same here. I love the new Tau aircraft, the Barracudas and the Tiger Sharks, especially the new designs they've got from Forge World. Yeah. So those scaled down to Aeronautica. I think this might be my Aeronautica in.
Yeah.
When it releases
Tau, Imperials, Orcs.
Yeah.
It's written in the stars.
We could do that. We could do that. Now all we need is for Eldar to be released for Adeptus Titanicus, and I'll be back all over that game as well.
Yeah. So yeah, well, speaking of Adeptus Titanicus, we've got some stuff coming up later on that as well. We've also got 3 board games shown off at the New York Toy Show. Rise of the Orcs, which is a 1-5 player base defence game, which sounds right up Jay's alley.
Rise of the Orcs?
Rise of the Orcs.
Oh, is this the one where you control a Terminator each?
Yeah.
Yeah, this one does look very
good. So you basically, you've got endless waves of orcs and you use strategy and tactics to hold out as long as you can.
Strategy, tactics, or an assault cannon.
Yeah. Mass reactive rounds. Yeah. So this looks pretty cool. And the Terminators in it were previously in the Space Marine Heroes range.
Yeah.
With some really nice sculpts in there. A little bit of a mark against it. The orcs are just counters.
Well, it's old school orcs, isn't it, where they use cardboard.
Yeah, it just seems a shame they didn't put a sprue or two of orcs in there, because they're really old kittens.
I mean, old boys, you don't have an orc boys lying around somewhere.
Yeah, so you've got tokens. You can always replace them with your own orcs, I suppose.
Mm.
We've got Crypt Hunters, which is a 2-player dungeon battler, with one player controlling the Stormcast and the other controlling the Nighthaunt, fighting over an asymmetric dungeon.
Mm.
It's all the details I've got there. Sounds interesting. Looks a bit Blackstone Fortress-y.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, we've got Blitz Bowl Season 2. Now, this is a shortened, board gamified version of Blood Bowl.
Yeah.
So, rather, Blood Bowl really is all about the leagues and stuff. This is very much a self-contained board game version of it.
I believe the first one was very popular.
Yeah, and I believe they put out some expansions. A lot of these games have been US exclusives. We only recently got the first Space Marine Adventures exclusive to game stores, of all places.
Yeah.
The other ones we never got, which is a shame, because that really nice Adeptus Mechanicus guy was in one of them from Blackstone.
Yes, he was. They are supposed to be getting released separate.
Well, they got released in the Blackstone expansion, which is how they're getting released here. So it's strange how they do some. A lot of it's tying into, I think it's Barnes & Noble bookstores, I want to say, that these are exclusive to. So it is very much a country-specific thing, which is a shame, because I think these would be pretty popular in the UK, these kind of self-contained board games, especially as an entry into the hobby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure you can probably order them online through Amazon and other places like that. We had a little bit of news about the Lumineth Realm Lords, Jay.
Oh, yeah, the next lowdown.
Well, we got the next lowdown. We also got a shipping document showing that the cards, dice, and something cryptically titled Lumineth board game has been shipped. Doing a bit of research on Tinterwebs today, the Hong Kong-based company that did the board game label thing produced stationery. So I'm thinking this is the card-based stuff rather than...
War Scroll cards and things.
Yeah, we were speculating about a battle box, but I suppose that'll be plastic and be produced in Nottingham anyway.
Yeah.
It's more so the card-based stuff that comes from China. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are on a ship, so they're here at some point. We know they're coming in the spring.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think Easter weekend's probably a good release date for these. I think that probably coincides with the end of the financial year as well.
I need to book a month off work to get all this.
So yeah, they are on the way, and hopefully we'll see a bit more about them at the Adepticon preview. Oh,
imagine if we booked a whole week off when the Lumineth come out, and we just spend a week working our Haish themed armies.
I'm up for that.
Yeah, I don't think I get permission.
I might have that week off, actually, to be fair. Yeah. So the Adepticon preview is going to be 2 hours long.
Whew. take your snacks in, your drinks.
I do wonder if the last half hour or so of this is going to be the first episode from Warhammer Storyforge.
Agreed. I mean, unless they talk a lot about each of the releases.
There's a lot of releases.
Mm. So we know Lumineth's going to be part of this.
Presumably the Sons of Baal will get there, unveiling there as well.
Yeah.
Maybe 40k.
Yeah, 9th edition, even if it's a teaser.
Yeah. Oh, man.
In the past, though, we've seen a few armies for each system revealed here. Though,
when is this?
This is March the something. End of March.
The logo on the post has Warcry, Blackstone Fortress, Warhammer Underworlds, so we'll probably see Daughters of Cain actually, and then obviously 40k in AOS. And they specifically did say there's going to be stuff from Storyforge, so Angels of Death. We might see more of this new animated Inquisitor based animation.
I did a post last week, I want to say, breaking down animation. What we think is going to be shown at the event. I think for Warcry, it wouldn't surprise me if we see a season 2 with a new box set.
Because
we've seen pretty much all the factions apart from the Sons of the Burning Fire, I can't remember what they're called. That fiery faction.
Yeah.
Spire Tyrants? No, that's the Varangard. The guy's obsessed with flame. We haven't seen them yet. So I think we'd. It could be good to see another expansion to that, maybe with some non-chaotic factions.
I was going
to
say,
a new starter box.
Yeah, I think we might see some more non-chaos factions as well, because they've released most factions now have a Warcry warband. Not all of them, but most of them do, because they released the cards a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, some people are just not chaos players but would like a nice little looking warband.
And you could do some unusual splinter stuff, like a Kernothi warband or a new Stormcast chamber that appears initially in this that then can later get expanded when new books come out down the line.
Cool idea.
I think we'll see all sorts of cool stuff, so make sure you tune into that one. I think it's another early start at the end of March. And we'll have all the news on the site. For Adeptus Titanicus, we've seen two new Warhound Titan weapons, the Ursus Claw and the Naptrix Shock Lance. These are super short-range, punchy weapons that are basically all about disrupting bigger titans. So the Ursus Claw rolls a dice, adds the strength of the weapon, plus one for each other claw that's going into the target. If you equal the scale of the titan, you turn them 90 degrees left or right, because you basically
pulling them around.
And if you roll over it, I think you immobilise them.
Or you topple them, pull them down.
Yeah. The other weapon, the shock lance, similar, really short range, but if it goes through, it can cause a system overload, so you automatically shut down your titan, while your bigger guns can then just pound away with the void shields down.
Wow, that's cool.
So these seem really cool for your super aggressive warhounds that are going to be... if it fails, they're going to get blown up.
Yeah.
But they're really fun. They look really fun. The weapons look really cool. I imagine these are resin. Warhounds aren't the easiest to magnetise, so you're probably easier just picking up a new box of Warhounds, to be fair. I mean, like the Psychic Titan, they might just sell it as a set, including the sprues for the Warhounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then we've had a few new things from Warhammer TV / Warhammer Community. This Week in Warhammer, a new kind of video on the traditional Sunday post, summing up everything that's going in the week. I quite like this.
Yeah, that's a really good. So do they cover even stuff on like Warhammer TV?
So I think it's just the releases.
Right, cool.
I guess any news or tournaments they might mention, it's obviously in the first one. Yeah, I really like this. Kind of, at least you get to see a little bit of a tease of what's coming.
Mm.
And then Warhammer TV is now 4 days a week.
Mm.
So yeah, lots more content. The guys are going to be super busy, I'm sure.
I'm guessing did he flick through presenters sometimes? I know Wade does like the lion's share.
Yeah, Wade's on the majority of the time. I know when they've got tournaments on, there's a little bit of cover, but yeah, I think they're going full into the Warhammer TV side, which is great, because I think that's one of the best things that's come out of GW recently.
Definitely. Cool.
Yeah, and then you had a little bit of video game news, didn't you, Jim?
Yes, just noticed yesterday that some new DLC has come out for the PC game Warhammer 40,000 Gladius, which is like the Civilization-type game set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. Is it 4X?
Yeah, explore, expand, something. I love Civilization.
I think it's one of them for 40K. So this is the Tau get added as a faction. So I think they join the four initial races that came out. I believe Chaos,
Space Marines Imperium Necrons, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. Tyranids have been added recently, and now Tau. So just wait for the Eldar.
Mike, give this a go. You said it was currently on offer, Dave, as well.
I had a notification yesterday. I think you've got the Steam page open. Yesterday it was £13.
Let's have a look how much it is today. If you were to buy it today, it would cost you...
Bearing in mind we're recording this on, what, the 20-something?
Yes, it is. It's 61% off at the moment. £12.08.
Yeah. That's worth a punt for £12, yeah. Surely.
Yes, and there's a lot of DLC, actually. The DLC is quite pricey, though. You can get a big bundle of it for £40, just over £40, but...
Even if you want to dip your toe in and buy just the base game, though.
Yeah. I think we should definitely give that a go.
I'd be happy to try that.
Sweet. We'll do that.
There you go. That's on my download list later, then. Sold. Jay's bought it now.
By accident. I'll buy that when I get in.
Excellent. Right, well, there's quite a nice variety of news.
There was one more bit of news today we just had on the website. We've put a link up, the new Black Library characters.
Oh, yes. Yes, Valerian and Alea.
So they're out, I think they came up for pre-order on Saturday, just gone, they're out this Saturday.
So independent retailers took pre-orders on Saturday, but they can't guarantee having stock until April, I want to say, for Element Games. Right. If you want the models, you've got to be in your Games Workshop this Saturday. You might be able to buy it online on Saturday as well, but
yeah,
I'm
think
sure.
You can buy it online on Saturday, but Saturday only.
Yeah.
And if you do go to your store and they've sold out, you can order one. But yeah, the important thing is get one on Saturday.
They've got a really interesting data slate, haven't they?
Yeah, well, Warhammer Community said the rules were coming out towards the end of the week. They were going to announce the rule, well, some of the rules on Warhammer Community, but they've leaked early. So if you go onto the Spruce and Brews website, you can see the rules. They are interesting.
But the most interesting thing about this is they're taken as a pair.
Yes.
I think it's the first unit we've got with different keywords, which is good. We had a bit of a discussion, like, can you take these in a Custodes army? Could you take these as a HQ choice in a Sisters of Silence army? It's a little bit unclear at the minute. I think, as intended, it'd be yeah, because each of them, well, one of the pair has got the correct keyword to use in that army.
Because currently, the only way you could take them, really, is Imperium.
And you can't take...
No.
Mixed units in an Imperium detachment anymore.
I think it even says on the thing, faction keywords, Imperium, and then everything else is in the rest of the keywords.
Yeah.
It's a strange one.
It does mention at the top of the... Obviously, it's from the instruction manual that full rules will be in the relevant codex. Obviously, not in the codex, but we do know a Custodes book is coming at some point.
And the fact that Talons the Emperor is slapped all over this thing, it's on the box, it's in the rule book that you get with it. Do we think that fuels the...
We said it last week, it makes so much sense to fold those units in.
It does, and even all the extra stuff in the Sisters of Silence range on the Forge World website, like their transports and their extra units with the two pistols and things like that, why not give them 40k rules? You're not going to sell more kits.
Well, it means I could build a Sisters of Silence army. Yeah. I'd have some minimal custodial stuff in there, even if I proxy it, at least I can build an army.
Yeah, it seems daft to me not to fold them in and make credit Talons of the Emperor.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see some extra. Obviously, the custodians get the cool rules. They get the extra invulnerable save, the objective secured for all of their infantry. If it's a custodian-only detachment, maybe we'll see. If it's a Sisters of Silence-only detachment, you get these rules. And if it's a Talons of the Emperor army, you get some extra rules.
Which is something we've seen in recent codexes as well, to encourage you to not do soup.
Yeah. Interesting. Excuse me, bad time. Right, I think that wraps us up in the news, doesn't it? Does that cover everything? Fantastic. So we're going to take a pause and we're going to come back with our main feature of this week's podcast. It is House of Chains, the new Necromunda supplement. So myself and Matt discussed at the beginning of this podcast that we tried out Necromunda for the first time, and I think there's been quite a big push into Necromunda at the moment with the new Dark Uprising box set and the announcement of these extra books that are going to come out to support the originally seen gangs and obviously on into the future.
Yeah, so this kind of came out of the blue. We had a preview a couple of weeks back where House of Chains, that was a bit of a zinchy influence there, was announced, obviously, as a Goliath source book. This was quickly followed on Twitter with the announcement of House of Blades for Escher, House of Iron for Orlok, and House of Artifice for the Vansar, with, I guess, the goal being over the year, they'll bring out source books for each of these factions.
Yeah.
And we first thought, okay, this is the codex for your gang. They've got Gangs of the Underhive. That's a bit weird that they're bringing this out. The book's come out. It's 160 pages long, and it is much more than just a codex. It's basically the essential tome on all things Goliath, plus other stuff to use in every faction as well.
So tease you into buying it even if you're not interested
in Goliath. I think that's the cunning plan. But it's definitely worth it. I mean, the first 40 pages is all lore about the Goliaths and about Necromunda. And I know you've not really read too much of the Necromunda lore, have you, Dave?
No, so I'm looking forward to my copy of this. Should be coming through the post. Mr. Postman should be delivering this tomorrow. So I want to enjoy dipping into the lore and reading more about specifically the Goliaths, but Necromunda in general.
Yeah, so the Goliaths were slaves, and they're essentially vat-grown labourers on Necromunda. Necromunda is a planet that's got massive manufacturers and refineries and all sorts of stuff going on. It's a very kind of polluted, choked planet, all ruled by this Lord Helmore, who is the king bin, who looks after the whole planet and turns a blind eye to some of the goings on in his city.
Quite a lot of what's going on in his city.
It's a very corrupt place, and this guy's pulling all the strings.
So
basically this tells about the Goliath, their slave links, and a little bit into the slavery on Necromunda as well, which is interesting. We also get a brand new Goliath gang list. So this is much expanded from the one in Gangs of the Underhive. They've added new units, new options. It's, I think we said a few weeks ago that these original gangs were a bit limited by what was on the sprues.
Mm-hmm.
Where by doing these books, they can introduce some new kits and mix up the options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've had access to the trading post, so you can always swap out the weapons, but that has meant getting some of the, well, either getting the resin upgrade kits or converting them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I know for people trying to get into the game easy, it is a lot simpler to just buy a box off the shelf and put it together, isn't it? So with that, they created two new unit entries, one of which is a new type of champion, the Stimmer. So these are 125 points, which I think you said earlier in the show. They're not cheap.
No.
But they are bananas good.
Are these like the big Ogryn type looking models?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've got a little bit of lore here. When a ganger rises up through the ranks and gets a taste for chems and violence, they sometimes eschew the path to leadership, instead focusing all their efforts on the mastery of violence in its most brute forms. This is the Stimmer, a combat stem-driven gang champion who's taken mastery of close combat to the extreme and is happiest when running, screaming at the enemy, guns blazing, and reducing fools to bloody hunks of meat.
Nice.
So basically this is a new champion type. So your gangers have got an option of upgrading into them during the campaign when they decide to just pump them fools full of drugs and go bananas. Or you can buy them as a champion in your initial gang, which is a really nice way of mixing up your different unit types. Yeah. They're all about, you know, being chemmed off their faces. You know, guys are big brutish guys at the best of times, so you put some growth drugs into them and they're not going to be very nice. Three attacks each these guys have got.
Yeah, nice.
They will punch face, and they can have all sorts of ridiculous weapons, such as twin-linked assault grenade launchers.
Which I may have mentioned, I will definitely be building on mine.
A bargain at 65 credits, so yeah, you're talking nigh on 200 credits for your guy armed with them. They can also take some nasty close combat weapons as well.
Yeah.
So they look really, really cool. We also get another new unit entry in the Forgeborn. Now, we thought this was going to be a replacement of the Juves.
Mm.
Juves are still in the book. These are just a different flavour of Juves. So they get all the bonuses that they get. So if you've not played Necromunda before, essentially your base gangers are your, you know, red shirts from Star Trek. They are just the general brutes who are probably going to die horrifically.
Yeah.
Your Juves are your youngsters who have introduced into the gang. They might not start with the greatest stats, but they are quick to learn in the rules where they get to learn the skills much quicker, and essentially they will rise up the ranks and become your new champions, mm-hmm. you know, over the story of the campaign, including the option to become Stimmers if they want to, which is pretty cool. It's an interesting one because all the awesome, cool, unique weaponry and stuff, you're probably going to forsake if you go down the Stimmer route, so it's probably best to keep them as not too genetically modified.
But
they look really cool with, again, unique weapons and stuff, and I think this is a really good way of doing it. They're dirt cheap as well at 35 credits.
Nice.
So you, in Necromunda, generally, most of the time, half the gang has to be made up of basic, either, basic troops or Juves. So you can't have a gang of just Stimmers.
No.
So these, and the, I think they're four in a box.
You get four Forgeborn and two Stimmers.
So it's a nice way of rounding out your cheaper points, because, you know, we saw in our games, 1,000 credits goes pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So having some cheap little, you know, we say 35 points, call it 50 points with some weapons. Add the rock swords and stuff, they're a bit more expensive, like 120 points, but you can give them some basic armaments and just round up your team and hope they survive the first few games to get some decent weapons.
Will I need to get some bigger handcuffs for my horse
rack? You might need something a bit bigger, yeah. They're a bit brutish. So yeah, so there's not many, I don't think there's any changes in the actual profiles for the normal stuff, it's just those two new guys added, but it catalogues everything together in one place, so you're not flicking through multiple books. If you're playing Goliath, you just really need this book.
Yeah,
you get all the fun stuff as well from Forge World, so you can take some croc guard dogs, essentially
guard crocodile.
So these are genetically engineered guard crocodiles that you can give to it's pretty much all your champions and leaders that can take them. And what they do when you get charged, they make a free charge action and attack first. Which is a bit of a deterrent if, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, charging is pretty tough in Necromunda anyway.
Yeah.
You think twice about charging the guy with the guard crocodile.
Yeah, you would.
I mean, it's 130 points, so it's quite expensive. But over the course of the campaign, you know, if you're a bit flash with the cash, crocodiles for everyone, Dave.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to give them cute and adorable names. because that's got to happen, hasn't it, really?
Yeah. We also get some unique characters mentioned in the book as well, one of which is the mother of all these beasts. So there's a little bit of lore here that essentially a noble up in the top of the hives bought his daughter a cute little pet that eventually ate said daughter, killed some of the maids in the house, and was flushed down into the underhive, where it just grew and grew and grew. Eventually it was captured by the Goliaths, who cloned it, you know, what could possibly go wrong, life finds a way and all that, to create the Sump Crocs that we've aforementioned. Unfortunately, it kept growing and escaped, and now just runs riot down the underhive. Some Goliaths have found how to call it out and, you know, leave some bait for it. And yeah, you can take it as a basically, essentially like a bounty hunter, a hired character during your games, which makes any nearby Sump Crocs better, increases their willpower and cool.
Because, like, mummy!
Massive three-headed, genetically engineered crocodile beast thingy.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's really cool. So, going on through the book, we get all the hangers-on and brutes they can take as well, which, again, has been split over some of the other books that they've had. And they can take some really cool stuff. So we saw the model for the new Zerka last week.
Yeah.
Stimmers are guys who have, you know, maybe got a bit too heavy on the growth drugs. These guys have taken it to ridiculous extremes. They can barely string a sentence together.
And they're like Mr. Hyde, aren't they? From Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, but there's no shifting between forms. They are just big and mental all the time. So it points out that, you know, abuse of growth stims is not without its risks, and you will end up looking like that. Uncontrollable rage.
Kids, don't do stims.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they're pretty banana. Strength 6, toughness 5, 3 attacks. 210 points, I reckon you can squeeze one of those in.
Eventually. I don't think I'll be starting the campaign with one, but potentially as the game goes on.
I'll have to increase the voltage on my shock batons, I think.
He's about 3 or 4 times bigger than your enforcers,
subjugators.
Well, if you need something to deal with one of them, you could take an Ambot. So what's really good about this book, and some people will maybe moan a little bit about duplication of some stuff from other books, but every hanger-on that they can possibly take is in this book.
See, I really like that.
Yeah.
I think that's so much better than having all your different books with, like, right, I'm taking an Ambot in this game, let me just dig out this big pile of books.
And this is it. It's, you know, it's probably only a handful of pages that are duplicated over the whole book, and it needs it all together.
Yeah.
Which, you know, some 40k books have been guilty of that. Some supplements where, oh, this tank's in the main book, but we're not going to reprint it here because you've already got it, which would be easier having it all in. So, yep, the Ambot rules are in there. We also have rules for Servitor Overins. Now, because they've got an affinity with the Goliaths, they get a discount to take them. Other gangs can take them, but they're 30 credits more.
Okay.
These guys are really fun. These are basically slave Ogrins who've got, like, grafted on weapons and stuff. I'm going to have to get some of these.
And we saw the plastic models from not that long ago, and they look fantastic.
We did, yeah. Also, shoot some hired guns that you can get. So, in the same way as the Venator gangs can basically craft their own bounty hunters, so can, well, all factions in this book. You can take Hive Scum, who are a base generic profile, who you can just give some weapons. So if you want to, again, pad out your gang with some, you know, disposable cannon fodder, a lot of the locations in the campaign will give you some of these to just add to your gang as well. Oh, so again, it's cool. Good that all the profiles are stuff in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, you're not flicking through multiple tomes, which is handy. You also get Bounty Hunter. So in the same way as the Venator ones, there's some stat lines to represent various races, and then they get all sorts of weird, cool gear, starting off at 80 credits plus the stuff. And again, it means that you can add some kind of people to your gang.
I'm really looking forward to maybe later on in the campaign converting up a bounty hunter that I can name and add to, you know, if we have a flavourful narrative battle where I can bring a bounty hunter on.
And, you know, he's there for a reason. So unlike the Venator gangs, once he's got his bounty, he'll get a cut of the cash and disappear.
Yeah.
But you've got the advantage of having, you know, this guy helping out during a battle.
And he'll be armed a bit differently than your other guys.
I think Necromunda really hands itself to the narrative side of things. So you have some fun stuff. I think it's worth the group talking together and just seeing what they want to have in the campaign, and then having one person running it with some surprises for the others.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm all up for stuff like this. It also introduces house agents, so you can have people that turn up from other houses that help out. They have an example character, Ajax Gorgoth, Lord of the Fist, Goliath Alpha. So he's a big brutish guy with a giant chainsaw. Because why not? And presumably he's going to get a model from Forge World. Most of these special characters do. New section to this are strong alliances. So you can ally your warband with a guild necromunda. It introduces a couple in this book, and presumably over the rest of the run of the books,
we'll see
they're going to introduce more of them, with some of them being more suited to some gangs than others. So these ones are very Goliath-based, and they'll get some advantages because of that. That's not to stop other houses from using these gangs. I mean, at the minute, you've not got many options. But yeah, the first one being the Slaver Gang, these are really cool. So you essentially get a slaver retinue who are really good, and you get them for free. The downside being if they take any captives, they will take them because that's their cut. Mm. So there's always a downside. There are certain ways that the allies will interact with the game and with the scenarios, and you can go against that, but you risk angering your alliance and it just splits and they go off and do their own thing.
Yeah.
So again, it just adds a bit of narrative flair to it. My favourite one of these is the House Green, who has a basically a Krieger Lord of the Palatine Cluster, Marshaler Helmar's Ash Militia. Basically some military dude in all in his finery and uniform and medals who rocks up. He'll conscript a couple of your guys to go die on some planet somewhere. It's alright, if they don't die they'll get some experience, brilliant. But, you know, you're probably going to lose them, but that's fine, they're scum. But he will help out with some military expertise during your game. And just, you know, just a bit of fun that you can write a bit of a narrative thread to.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea.
So we also get a lot of stuff to add more fluff to the game. Subplots. So you draw a card from a deck of cards, and that card will do something in the game. So, example, if you drew an ace, reveal this card when one of your fighters takes an enemy out of action with an unarmed attack, the fighter immediately gains D3 plus 1 XP.
Cool.
If they're engaged with two or more enemies, they earn D6 plus 1 XP. Mm. So cool narrative events that you're trying to do, a bit like Hidden Agendas, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some generic ones in the Necromunda rulebook, but it's nice to see some gang-specific ones. Likewise, if you are struggling in a campaign, you can appeal to the houses for a favour. And it could be something really good, like the top result on this chart is you immediately get some genetic upgrades on your guys. Brilliant, free stat increases. If you roll the lowest on this chart, however, the housemasters are angry at the cheek if you're asking for assistance, and they will slave one of your guys, and they're just lost from your gang forever.
Aww.
So it's a bit of a gamble, but it's, I think that's quite cool, where you push your luck and like, do you go to the lords and say, well, please, sir, can I have some more? And see if they appease or not. And the way it works, essentially, roll 2d6, and you add one for each other gang that's got a higher rating than you, which is a nice way of balancing out. You know, sometimes in these campaigns, one gang's way ahead, so all the other gangs are then going to get some support from the higher houses, which is really nice. Again, it's all more narrative and a bit of fun, and no way is this a super super balanced tournament game. I think that's the wrong way of probably looking into Necromunda.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Goliaths also get their own skill tree with some really cool stuff. And I think this is probably something we'll see for each house. Because the skills in the main book are really good, but it's the gang-specific stuff that really kind of differentiates the way the gangs play.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the Goliaths can take a skill called... So in Necromunda you can take two actions. Goliath with this skill can attempt to make a third action, basically go for it.
Nice.
If they roll under their toughness. And they can make a third action, whatever they like.
Ooh. That's tough.
Yeah, but your stimmers and stuff will have good toughness.
Yeah, you can have like toughness four and stuff.
Oh, roll under?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's cool.
So if you roll under your toughness, you can make a third action. At the end of that action, you're automatically pinned. So basically, you exert yourself and then just pass out. But that extra action could be all the difference.
Yeah.
There's a really cool one, Immovable Stance, where you get a new double action, Tank. Until the start of the fighter's next activation, they increase their armor save by 2 and cannot be moved in any way, including knockback, and they cannot be pinned.
That's cool.
So your guys have, what, a 5-plus save with Furnace Plates?
Yeah.
So puts them up to a 3-plus save and they cannot be shifted.
And I like that about... Because pinning's quite a big thing in Necromunda.
It is, yeah.
As long as you're hit, you're pinned. Unless you've got some card or rule that states otherwise. So I was a little bit worried about your big Stimmer guys charging up the... Well, you don't really charge up in Necromunda, but running down a corridor, say, leading the way, wanting to get into combat... All you need to do is hit with a ranged weapon and he'll be pinned. So something like this stops that from happening.
Yeah, and again, it adds some like more fluffy bits to the gang. And the final one we mentioned is Walk It Off. Whenever you do 2 move actions during activation, you can make a toughness check. So roll under your toughness. If you do, you can recover a lost wound or discard a flesh wound. So basically, yeah. They just kind of walk it off because they're beasts.
Because they're nails.
Which is really cool. You know what's even cooler than that? You can genetically craft your warband. So the Goliaths are vat-grown. Some of them are natural-born, but then have enhancements later on. And there's a whole suite of rules where you can change the profile by paying points, or in some cases, reducing points from the cost. So you could say that your guy has got a corrupted slug. A faulty data slug is reducing this fighter having only the basis level of education. Reduce their leadership.
They're educated.
Reduce their leadership, willpower, and intelligence by 1. It's minus 5 credits, though. So if you go, actually, I don't care if my guys are thick, it then buys me some credits to, you know, increase their strength or their toughness.
As long as they know which way around to hold a gun.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so there's one here, Fearless but Foolish. Increase their cool by 1, but reduce their intelligence by 1. So I think there's probably some min-maxing you can do with this, but I don't think that's the right way to look into this game. It just lets you do some fun stuff and come up with a narrative.
It'd probably be good to like roll on this or something rather than choose and then develop the characters based on what you get.
Yeah, I mean, even the good ones, though, like overdeveloped muscles, increase strength by 1, but reduce their initiative by 1. So there's always like a downside, which is pretty cool. And you can have some absolutely beastie-looking Goliaths. I think you need some conversions with this as well, so you can differentiate. Yeah. And there's the Vat-born, the Nat-born, who are natural-born but have evolved, and they have their own suite of upgrades. And then you have the Unborn, who are outsiders from House Goliath, who have been gifted with some upgrades as well.
So that opens conversions for, like, if you pick up one of the other houses, but maybe do something to them to make them more Goliath.
Say an Orlok.
Yeah,
an Orlok has been enslaved and then it's kind of been brought into the family. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then while they've been there...
What's his face from Game of Thrones? The guy who's with the Starks. What was his name? From the Iron Islands.
Can't
anyway,
him.
But yeah, so and they get some cool stuff like Survivor. The fighters suffered an untold hardship through their life. When they make a recovery test, you can re-roll the injury dice. So they're less likely to die, which is a good thing. So yeah, I think it's really fun. I imagine we'll see this kind of thing for all the other houses.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much the genetic engineering. So House Escher are essentially the drug pushers in Necromunda, so they might have some like poisons and combat drugs.
Maybe once per... turn or whatever, you can drink a potion and increase your speed by 4 inches or something like
that. Yeah, where the van start, we get some cool techno gizmos and stuff.
Here's a plasma rifle, but you can put this on it and this on it and like create your own weapon.
Yeah, which is really cool. There's also rules for Goliath terrain.
Oh.
So as part of your...
So just dead bodies.
Yeah. As part of your gang, you can buy some terrain that you get to place in any scenario.
You'd be able to buy animal spells next.
Yeah. So there's amino canisters. So these are the kind of... remember the Bacta tanks at Star Wars?
Yeah.
They kind of grow the Goliaths in. So they can go into them to recover flesh wounds.
Okay.
So that costs you 60 credits. Which is, you know, it's a chunky gang, and it's, I suppose it's stuck in one place. But if you're playing in a defensive scenario, it might be worth getting one of them to get rid of your...
Put a sentry turret on top. Get it, put a mohawk on it.
Exactly. You can buy barricades, which essentially ignore blaze or melter rules, so you're just going to fence off a bit of area. They're not going to be super effective in every game, but they're fun things to take. You can take a heavy rivet cannon sentry gun. You need a guy to man it, but, you know, a big gun that you can just...
Daka.
Exactly.
Can you take boots? I think it sounds like I need some kind of boots or super drug.
There's a distinct lack of boots.
As my terrain feature.
There is a pillar of chains, which is a pillar, yeah? Okay. With some chains on it, yeah?
Well.
Which means that you can re-roll your dice when you try and capture enemy fighters, because they just grab them and put them on this big pillar.
And I guess that must be what they make their house of chains out of.
Yeah. I imagine so, yeah. It's very chain heavy. So yeah, I think that's a cool thing. And you'd absolutely have to make some Goliath scenery.
Yeah, some big pillar with chains coming off it.
So yeah, we also get some unique Goliath scenarios. So the rules in here... So normally in a game of Necromunda, there's a chart that you roll on where you'll either get a specific scenario, or you'll get to pick a scenario, or your opponent will get to pick a scenario. If you get to pick one, you can pick one of the Goliath ones out of this book, which may favour the Goliath style.
Mm.
So there's a really fun one called the Beatdown. So you've got two gangs who are just passing in the Underhive. Everything's fine. Nobody's going for their guns. It's definitely not going to end the fight. And someone turns around and goes, "You're looking at me." And you basically... it's a game of chicken. So... you can ready a number of players, but the less players you ready, the more experience you get at the end of it.
Ah.
So if you think you can take this one guy, you'll win the scenario. But then they might go, "Oh, I don't know about this, I'll ready two guys," and you kind of, between you kind of, right, it'll escalate or keep it. So it'd be, in theory, it could be a really quick fight where your guy just turns around and punches mine in the face and it's over. Or suddenly all my guys pull their guns out and I get much experience. But this punk who's come in there and started one of my fellas. So again, nice narrative twist, and yeah, should be a bit of fun. There's about six of these, which are really cool, where there's one, Something to Prove, Giant Killer, where if you're the underdog and you're fighting a gang with a higher rating, basically they just go mental, they don't care about bottling, they have to prove something.
Right.
And yeah, I think the attacker gets more... Yeah, the attacker's an underdog with something to prove, trying to blow you the nose with a stronger gang. So you are going to, you know, pass call checks and stuff. But if you lose some reputation. So it's like,
right,
you know, pushing your luck as far as you can in order to take out the bigger gang. So fun stuff like that, which I think is really cool, and I hope we see a whole suite of these. But it's not just Goliath stuff that we get in this book. Oh, no. There's a whole new gang in here. The Slave Ogryns. Now, these look really, really cool. I don't think they're going to be the best gang in the world, just because you're going to be limited with bodies.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the full rules to take an entire Ogryn gang.
So earlier on in the book, you had them if you just wanted to take them as like an additional guy in your gang. This is for an actual,
a whole gang of Ogryns. Slave Ogryns. So your lead is 145 credits. He can take some cool weapons. Fair enough. Unfortunately, your standard gangers are super expensive too, at 90 credits.
Mm.
So you're not going to get many of them, but... And in some scenarios, that's going to limit you where, I don't know, you're playing 7 plus D3 players. I probably haven't got 7 people in my warbands.
Yeah.
But they're all ogres, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think these are going to be really fun for conversions. I mean, originally, I was planning, I've got some
Astra Militarium Ogryns.
Well, I've got some ogres from Sigmar as well. I've just converted them up. But then we found out again, getting some new plastic kits.
Mm.
It looks like they come in boxes of two. So they might be a little bit pricey as far as warbands go, but they'll look really cool.
And you won't need many of them.
No, you won't need many of them. If you want a slightly cheaper Ogryn, you can take lobotomised ones as well. So these are, these guys are thick on the scale of Ogryns anyway. So they're not the sharpest knife in the house of chains. But they are lobotomised ogres with a gun strapped to their arm. So, what more do you need?
Yeah.
So they look really cool and they've all got the skill trees and everything. So it's nice to see stuff like that in the book. And then the final section, we get pretty much weapons and war gear references for everything you could possibly take in the gang, along with all the rules for those weapons.
Sweet.
So it's really cool. I am looking forward to the rest of these books coming out.
Yeah, I think they'll be really good. And it's really, the Goliath and Escher were the two warbands that came out at the beginning of Necromunda. This is really well and truly fleshed them out and give them loads of new stuff. They've obviously got new models. There's new directions to take your gang in, like, say, enhancements and drugs and stuff. Yeah. So, yeah,
really. And I think there's loads of options for non-Goliath players. I picked it up because I thought it looked a good read. And, I think it was about 20-odd quid, 28 quid, I want to say, for a big 160-page book.
20 quid, I think it is on Element.
Is it? It's a bargain. So, yeah, it's well worth picking up. It's worth mentioning as well, in the very back of the book, the cards are sold out like that. I managed to pick up a set of the new cards. But all of the profiles are in the back of the book anyway.
Sure.
So, it's not the same as having a card, but at least you can select them out of here.
And you can write them down, because, in the game we had the other day, you only got to pick two.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I had the old Goliath card, which I think is still valid.
They are still valid. They've got some newer ones that maybe affect some of the new units.
Yeah.
But if in some scenarios you randomly pick them, there is a D66 chart in here as well to randomise it. So I think that's really good, and I'd like to see that for all of the cards.
Yeah.
But I really like this book. I know there's been a bit of grumbling on the internet that it essentially invalidates House Gangs of the Underhive. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a fair comparison, because you can still play Goliaths with Gangs of the Underhive.
Yeah.
You just miss out on some of the cool new stuff.
Yeah. I've borrowed your copy of Gangs of the Underhive to make sure Goliaths is the way I wanted to go, and that's such a cool book.
Yeah.
Really, really good. But looking forward to that coming through the post tomorrow.
Yeah. So that's House of Chains. We've got another one. I think there's one every quarter.
So next one's Escher.
Next one's Escher.
Excellent. Right, we'll let Matt catch his breath and we'll come back with our top three. And so, we move on to this week's top three, where we ask each other, if we were in the Imperium of Man, if we were in the 41st... Is it 41st Millennium? It is, isn't it? What 40, job would we have? 41st Millennium.
Yeah.
What job we'd have?
Yeah, the top three jobs in the Imperium of Man.
Now, we're going to read out your selections towards the end of the podcast, but we're going to start with our own. I'm going to kickstart this week with my third choice, and my third choice is a Lord Commander of a Planetary Defence Corps.
Oh, right, not starting off small then.
Not starting off small. The main reason behind this, he's got a tough job, obviously, organising the defence of the planet. Well, see, that's it, because he's never going to have to see combat. He's pretty safe. You know, he's got hundreds and thousands of underlings and grunts that he can throw out to defend his planet. He's all right, sipping his cocktail in a nice bunker somewhere.
Well, until the Inquisitor turns up asking questions about why he didn't win that war.
Yeah,
well, you just got to hope that you're on some sort of backwater planet. You know, the Inquisition might take a while to get there. So you take full advantage of that and, you live in your best life.
You'd, really, you'd be the right corrupt villain ruling Necromunda, wouldn't you?
If I got paid enough and bribes and stuff, then I'm willing to, look the other way. But I think that's quite a safe job, because the Imperium Man is a very, very dangerous place.
It is a dangerous place.
So being the commander of Planetary Defence Force, I think, is pretty safe.
You don't want to be the guy on the front lines. You want to be the fella in the tent, miles back, sipping tea, don't you?
In the tent, exactly. In the palace, by the
way.
Yeah.
I'd have said Emperor of Mankind if he wasn't so skeleton-esque.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that... That's my choice as my third one. Jay, what's your third choice?
My third choice is a librarian.
Yeah, I can see that.
You like your books, Jay?
Yeah, not a librarian of the Adeptus Astartes. I'm talking about a regular, like, librarian, works in a library.
A bookworm.
Yeah, and not just any library, a library on my crag, you know? Because I'm thinking, that library, you know, Gilman's own library, that's going to have a lot of codexes in it. And I'm thinking, it's probably got a lot of codexes that haven't been released yet in there.
Probably has, yeah.
So I'm thinking, as a librarian, it's a quite a quiet job, quite a safe job. I'd probably argue it's safer than Lord Commander of the PDF. But, yeah. And also, I get the advantage of I can have a nose through all the codexes and see what's coming out.
Well, you say that, but I'm sure there's a Mechanicus, is it? One of the Horus Heresy books, where a lot of them are lobotomized servitors, aren't they?
Ah, okay. Well, I haven't handed in my application form yet, so I've got a bit of time to consider.
That's ace. Awesome. Your third choice, Matt?
My third choice, and you guys, you're thinking too small. You're thinking too small. I would want to be a princeps of the Adeptus Titanicus.
Okay.
Commanding a god engine, stomping across the battlefields, floating in an amniotic tank. Yeah, it'll be fine. I probably can't get out for a walk very much, but, you know, I'm in a Titan. That'd be dead fun.
Yeah. Or you'd just be dead.
Or I'd be dead, yeah. And, you know, there's lots of psychological feedback and trauma as part of that job, but it'll be fine. You've got big stompy feet and massive guns that can level a city.
That's pretty big. That's a pretty big scale idea, but a pretty big scale job. My second choice isn't that at all. So I'm envisioning some Imperial planet on the edge of the Imperium. So they have a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with different races. Imperial.
This is verging onto heresy.
It's verging onto heresy. What I would like to be is the owner of a backwater Imperial planet bar. So he's behind a bar, you know, he's serving the likes of crew and, you know, all sorts of characters are coming in. He's getting all these kind of strange beers from these rogue traders that are passing through. He's heard all these stories about what's going on in the galaxy.
I think what you're describing there, Dave, is the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Yeah, I am, aren't I? But I think that'll be a fantastic job.
Our next Warhammer 40k RPG needs to be set. Yeah. We all start in his tavern.
Yeah, it's just your big neon sign outside Dave's. Yes, it's going out there.
Yeah. What is it, Bomb? Dave's bra.
Dave's bra.
Sort of scraped on the side of this wall.
That's Dave's bra going straight to our Necromunda campaign.
What's your second choice, Jeff?
Can I have a job at your bar? My second choice is a job at Dave's bra. My second choice is a cleaner.
A cleaner?
A cleaner at the Inquisitorial headquarters. Yeah. Now, in my experience, cleaners get access everywhere. Yeah. I have to swipe through about four doors to get into my office at work, and yet I get there and the cleaner's there. So I'm thinking a cleaner at the Inquisitorial HQ could probably get access pretty much everywhere.
You'd definitely get your cell phone battle tone there.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, there must be a ton of cool stuff to find out at the Inquisitorial HQ.
I'm going to be honest, in all the artwork of terror in places like that, it doesn't look particularly clean.
No, I haven't seen many Inquisitorial cleaners in the artwork or the books of them. But I'm thinking, you know, it probably pays quite well. You probably don't get, like, spoken to very much, and if you're working in Inquisitorial headquarters, you don't really want to be spoken to very much. It's probably a bad thing if you do get collared and recognised.
Yeah.
You can just meander in and out of all the cells and all the offices, and, you know, when the Inquisitors are at the restaurant getting their dinner on their dinner break, you can have a nose through all the files and things, and then when they walk back in and find you doing that, I'm just cleaning, and they just let you go.
Or just execute you on the things. Spot.
Perfect. I need to rethink this one as well, then, don't I, really? I need to find one where there's no chance of getting executed.
There's no chance of either getting lobotomised or executed.
Yeah.
What's your second choice, Matt?
My second choice is the guy who executes Jay for poking around the Inquisitorial headquarters. Yeah, an Inquisitor. They're nasty chaps, really, aren't they? They pretty much get free reign to do whatever they like. Yeah, you might get in a bit of trouble and have another Inquisitor after you if you go rogue a little bit.
That's the only person people you need to answer to, isn't it? Other Inquisitors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you keep to yourself and, you know, yes, you might have some Xenos tech, but, you know, we're looking at this for the good of humanity, so it's definitely, definitely not heresy. And if anyone says otherwise, we'll destroy the entire planet and then blame it on someone else. Blame it on the cleaner who's been poking around the virus bomb collection.
Well, Matt, you've stolen my top choice. It had to be an Inquisitor. What really attracts me to Inquisitor stuff is like the Eisenhorn book. So they're almost like detectives, aren't they?
Yeah, Sherlock, Obi-Wan, Cluedo, was it? Yeah. The one out of Rogue Trader.
So, I think they're really cool. And like you say, they can call upon whatever Imperium craft they want. Some of them, like the Order of Xenos, they even use Xenos technology, you know, heresy a little bit, but they're doing it for the good of the Imperium. And like I said, they get the final say in a lot of these things
as well.
They
do, yeah. No one questions the Inquisition.
No.
Nobody expects them either.
No. Your top choice, Jay.
My top job in the Imperium of Man would be a position in the HR department at the Imperial Palace. Because being in the HR department at the Imperial Palace, I mean, in any HR department, there's an element of confidentiality. You know, if one of your employees comes to you in HR, you know, they speak to you in confidence, you know, the problems they're having with a certain department, problems they're having, I don't know, with one of the high
bullying
lords.
In the workplace,
exactly.
Things like that, yeah.
So all the gossip you must learn in the HR department at the Imperial Palace. Ah, you must learn some things there.
It's up there with being a bartender in some off little planet, isn't it?
It's almost comparable to being a bartender at Dave's Bra.
And I imagine disciplinaries would be fairly short in the Imperium as well. It'd pretty much start with the door opening,
well,
then a gun cracking out, and then that's it.
This is it. You wouldn't really have much paperwork to do.
You wouldn't know.
Because it's either you get on with your job, or otherwise, yeah, you get lobotomised or sent to the far reaches of the...
So instead of being the one... being lobotomised, you'd be the guy who'd be
lobotomising people.
Possibly, but I'd be just more interested, you know, you can imagine, like, I don't know, the High Lord of whatever coming to your office and complaining about the Ecclesiarchy and what's going on there, and no one else knows this stuff, but I would.
Yeah, but you'd have tons of complaints, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
you would get all the gossip.
You get all the gossip, that's it. That's what I'm just thinking. I reckon there's a lot of gossip going around the Imperial Palace.
Yeah, definitely. I hear that lion, the traitor.
This is it. Step through to my office, Matt. Tell me all about it.
Finish us off with your top choice, Matt.
So, you know, what's cooler than having your own ship, having a license signed by the Emperor himself to do trade with whoever you wanted for the goodness of mankind? Having a crew of ne'er-do-wells, probably with a cool 70s soundtrack on the radio, gun at your side, jetting off across the galaxy, a rogue trader. Rogue traders are cool.
Rogue traders are cool. They're the Han Solo of Warhammer.
They are. It's like an Inquisitor, but cooler. And doesn't really answer to anyone, not even other rogue traders.
They're like, I guess, a rogue trader to me, they're like the only humans in the galaxy that are actually free. Like,
and they're allowed to trade with aliens, yeah, and the like, you know?
All the other humans in the galaxy are part of a big machine. Whereas rogue traders, I've got a license, like you say, to go off and do whatever they want to do. They're living as free as you can possibly
be. They're living the dream.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably dangerous out on the outskirts of humanity.
The thing is, if it gets too dangerous out there on the far edges of the galaxy, just go to Dave's Bra. Yeah. Chill out there.
And, you know, the shops where these guys must go, they've always got some awesome gear, haven't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. what that one rogue trader, she's got a sword for a leg.
Exactly.
I mean, where'd you buy a sword for a leg?
If you're a rogue trader, you can get it.
Yeah.
You go to roguetrader.com and order all your specialist gubbins.
Mail order
steampunk, yeah.
Excellent. Well, that had to be the funniest top three we've done in a very, very long time. So I can't wait to read out your selections, which we're going to be doing in just a few moments. Right, onto the community picks. We've got one over on Facebook, and then Mike? You've changed your name, Matt. Matt is going to take it away on Twitter. So Sean Gleason on Facebook says, Rogue Trader, an Inquisitor, or a Noble?
Okay.
Did you mention a Noble?
Yeah.
Noble's a good position. Take it away on Twitter, Matt.
So Andy Wood says, the person who has to push the snooze button on the Emperor's alarm clock. The person who has to change the Days Without Heresy board. And the ship pilot who has to find the rock in space. Presumably not the wrestler.
No.
Pete Allison, Inquisitor, Senior Imperial Archivist, plenty of work, no targets, and a Navigator, providing you don't stare too long or a weak of mind. Fabius Fulgrim says a Servitor. I don't think anyone would really like to live in the 41st millennium, and a lobotomy would make everything easier to cope.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Vincent Notley, Deathstrike driver. I mean, was there any doubt?
No doubt.
Overtron, a penitent engine builder, a black ship guardsman, and an Adeptus Arbites meter maid. Roman Ruin, it says a Fenrisian brewmaster. A servo school repair adept and a purity seal stamper.
Oh yeah, yes.
Stormgrad Game says a planetary governor, a commander of some big battleship, and a rogue trader. And Jim Kitchen, an Adeptus Mechanicus toaster repair. I like that. And Andrew Gibb, anything where the Imperium has forgotten your entire ecosystem exists for your whole life.
There you go.
So there we go, some good answers there.
Some very good answers. Thank you for your contributions to this week's top three. So what are we asking for our next week's top three?
Next week's on a certain theme. We want to know the top three worst jobs in the Imperium of Man. What would you not want to do?
What would you not want to do? So, yeah, we'd like to hear your choices. Please send them in to us via the social media links which are provided at the end of the podcast. And I think that wraps us up for another week in the hobby, guys. I think that's us.
I'm off to get the 50-50 Nornoi mix out.
Yeah. So we will be back next week with more news, hobby updates, and whatever we're going to feature in our top three. So we'll see you all again next week.
Bye.
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 Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.